Hello, my name is Chander Dhal, commonly pronounced as Chander Dhal. Today we're going to talk about DocumentDB. I'm a principal consultant with Kasten, and here's a link to my lynda.com course on DocumentDB. For a lot of beginners and intermediate level people, it's about 2 to 2.5 hours. Today's agenda is pretty awesome. We're going to do very little slides and a lot of code. We're going to talk about DocumentDB CRUD operations, create, read, update, delete in .NET and then in Node.js. And then we'll also show you how we're going to take an existing MongoDB database and transfer it over to DocumentDB on Azure. So DocumentDB is a fully managed database service that runs in Azure. We have to do nothing at all. It's completely managed by Azure. It's very fast, very, very fast. You're talking 10 to 15 millisecond reads and writes. If you go to DocumentDB.com, they talk about it on 99% of the queries. And that's pretty amazing. It's very scalable and highly available. Look at the breadth of data that could be carried by Microsoft data centers all over the world. So you really don't have an upper limit. When you're using an RDBMS, we have a problem of scaling up. But when you're using a NoSQL database, it's mostly scaling out. So you're getting both the benefits because not only do you have a NoSQL database, it also has a SQL-like query syntax. Yes, you heard me correctly. By the way, you can also use JavaScript inside the database. And then DocumentDB, according to me, is one of the very few databases that provide you with a variety of consistency levels. Let me tell you what that means. So the first one is strong consistency, the same as what you get in SQL Server. Means you get ACID transactions, guarantees with it, as you would get in SQL Server. Now, of course, that could be something may not be very fast. So you may want to do something else, which is more like eventual consistency, which you might have been doing in a lot of NoSQL databases. Now, eventual consistency means, let's say I made a request to change data, and it changes one copy of the data. And then there are two other copies of that data. Assume you have a master, and then you have two slaves. Well, the master gets updated, but it might take some time to update the slaves. So if I make another request to get the same exact data that I just updated in the master, the request might go to the slave, and I might not see the latest data. So that's eventual consistency. It's really fast, but the problem is you may not be very consistent. Now, it works in a lot of NoSQL kind of scenarios, for example, social networks and a lot of others. Then you also have session consistency. And what does that mean? Let's say I'm a user, and I have a session where I go and update something. As a user, I will always get the latest update that I just made. Maybe other users might not get that. And that's what session consistency is. And then we also have a fourth one, which is bounded staleness. Now, that's pretty amazing. What it allows you to do is you can have at most, let's say, K updates. So for example, if you want to update something, you want to make sure that this data is at least updated to the last two versions. So you will never get data that's three versions behind. It'll only be two versions behind, and that's a setting you can change. Or you can also do time-based bounded update. What does that mean? Well, what you could say is every 10 milliseconds, I want you to go update my data. You could also say every 100 milliseconds, I want you to have consistent data. So you've got these four different kinds of consistency levels, and that's the power of DocumentDB. Automatic indexing. If you've ever used any kind of search index, you know that automatic indexing is an amazing thing because you keep creating these indexes, and when you have the retrieval is really fast because now you're actually querying the indexes, not the actual data. With DocumentDB, you get that by default. And you can, of course, you can turn it off if you want to, but by default, you have it. That's pretty much it for slides. So we're going to go and jump into demos. First, we're going to do CRUD operations on .NET. So we're going to pick Visual Studio 2017, file new project. We're going to do a web project with ASP.NET Core. I'm going to call it Kasten. And then I'm going to pick Web API. I could have picked anything. It's really not a talk about Web API. It's a talk about DocumentDB. So we're going to create some really bad code with Web API because we're going to do CRUD operations with DocumentDB. So we'll start with a class, product. So we've got a class called product. We're going to have some properties in it. DocumentDB requires your ID to be an string, not an integer or a GUID. So we're going to create an ID, and then we're going to say product has a model, and then we also have a description. One thing to keep in mind is that this is going to be serialized. So we need to make sure that we have JSON property, which is part of Newtonsoft.json. That's part of ASP.NET Core. And we're going to assign this to every single property. It's a bit of copy-paste. And then we're going to make sure we name these properties more like in a camel case style, because it's more JSON-based. So what's the next thing? We're going to create a repository, and this repository, in this case, let's create an interface. And I can call that interface idocdb repository. Now this interface will be a public interface, and we'll make sure that it does CRUD operations for any particular item. So this could be generic, where T is class. So this works for pretty much anything. Now we're going to give it some functions. What are we going to do? Get, put, update, and delete. So basically, it's going to be a get where I take an ID and get you back that particular object. And then I'm going to do document. In this case, I don't really have a document. What's a document? I'm going to go to grab a NuGet package. So search for it, DocumentDB, and you'll see this one's going to pop up. It's got about 12,000 downloads. Once I have this, I should be able to use the document class. So I can come in here, use control dot, and then use Microsoft at Azure documents, and say create async. So when I want to create async, I want to pass in the entire object, which in this case is a generic object. I'm going to do the same exact thing for update. In case of an update, I always need an ID, and then I need the object that we're going to replace our current object with. And then we can also have delete, and in this case, we're not really passing anything back. And keep in mind, this code is not best practices code. This is just demo level code to show you how very quickly from scratch you can start using DocumentDB, and it's such an amazing experience. Now, once we're done with this, I'm going to take this and also create a class. So in this case, I have a class. I'm going to call it docdb repository and add that class, and then make sure that it inherits from this particular interface that we just created, where T is class. I'm going to do control dot and then implement that entire interface. So the first thing I'm really interested to do is work with initialize, because I want certain things to work before I can move forward. Now, in order for this to work, I need to get certain values. So for example, I need the database ID. Now, ideally, you would put all of this in some kind of configuration file, but since we are out of time here, we would like to just write some bad code. Everyone appreciates bad code. Just kidding. So you got collection ID, and then you would also need an Azure endpoint, which we'll grab in a second from Azure, and then we'll need an Azure auth key. So here's Kasten, which is my database, also the name of my company, and then I have products. Now the next thing I want is to go to portal.azure.com. Now what you do here is you go to new, and then search for DocumentDB. And then you can check this one, NoSQL DocumentDB. And you can pick what you want. So in this case, we'll pick this one and then go and create an instance. So when you create an instance here, you can say Kasten in this case, and then you can say create new, and this is your resource group. And then you can choose your location and then say create. So once you do that, it's less than a minute and you will have your instance up and running. Now, I'm going to discard this because I've already created this for you. So once I go to my instance, you can see that this is populating on the side. I can actually get my keys here that has a lot of things. So for example, I have my URI here, which is exactly what I wanted to use in case of Azure endpoint. And then I also need my primary key. I hope you're not using my primary key to log into Azure. That's it. That's all I need. So the next thing I need is my document client, which is part of the DocumentDB NuGet package, which we just brought in. So it's going to be controller dot. That's it. So we have everything we need to initialize our client. So we got document client. So once we have the document client, it needs a URI. In this case, it's going to be Azure Endpoint, because that's what we're using. Keep in mind, you don't really need to have an Azure instance to start coding in case of DocumentDB. What you could always do is get DocumentDB emulator, and it will actually run locally on your machine. Now, you could have not added this connection policy. I just wanted to show you there's a lot of connection policies, and all I did is say enable endpoint discovery false. It was actually not required. But now that your client is instantiated, we're going to go ahead and create database if not exist. Now, which is really the database I want to create in my DocumentDB instance. Currently, it has no database. And then I also have create collection if not exist. And then the reason I put wait here is because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to create an async await version for it. So I'm going to go ahead and create these particular methods and then replace this with async and then say task. Now here's where I'm going to do a try catch. And the reason I'm trying to do a try catch is because I want to go ahead and read the document database. And if I don't find it, then I want to create it. So let's try this and say, okay, await client.read database async, and then say it would require the URI for the database. And there's a really cool utility here, which is after some time you'll see how intuitive this is. So in this case, I'm going to say I've got a database ID. Do you actually have it as part of my instance in Azure? If not, well, it's going to throw an error. So when it throws an error, I'm going to say x.statuscode, which is if it is equal to not found, well, in that case only, go create it. So this is a good check, because even if you know that you already have the database, or you don't think that database exists, you don't want to create it or overwrite an existing database. So this way you can easily check this. So you've got ID equals database ID, which is again the value that we have up there in our config, which is really not a config, technically needs to come out of a config. So we've done this, and this should work, and then we're going to go create a collection. So same exact logic, except this time we're going to do this for a collection. So we have a database, and part of that database is going to be a collection. We do a bit of copy-paste, not a good idea in production, but it works here. Read document collection async, you've got uri.create. Now in this case, you're going to have document collection URI, and for that, I would need the database ID, and then I also need the collection ID. Just to make it a little better for you to see what's going on, you've got this. That's pretty much it. Now, if that document collection doesn't exist, and I have the same exact status code not found, then what I want to do is come in here and say create document collection async, which is right here, and you can see if you hover over it, it says this needs a string database link, and then the next thing it needs is really the collection. So I'm going to remove everything here, go to the next line. Now, in order to get that particular database link, all I need to do is create document URI. Oh, sorry, this is going to be database URI. And for the database URI, all I need is the database ID. Once I have that, I'm going to do new document collection, because it needs the entire collection now. So in this case, it's really a collection with ID equals to collection ID. That's it. Now, you don't need to do anything more, but you do have options. For example, you could do request options and say something like offer throughput, which is pretty standard. You can say 1,000 or something. Now, again, wasn't required, but just so you know, there's a lot more options than you might think. And then if still something goes wrong, well, then in that case, you know, throw an exception. So I just want to know what happened. Now we've got the database, we've got the collection, and those are two good things we have. Now what's next? Next thing what we could do is create our product or whatever class that is, that object that we want to be part of our actual document inside the DocumentDB. So I could say create document async, and we can say URI factory dot create document collection URI in this case. So you can see if you hover over it, it's looking for the database link and then the object. So in this case, you can say database ID. That's a typo. And once you have that, the next thing could be collection ID. And then your actual value. So I just want to move this to the next line so you know what's going on. So I've got a wait, create document async, and then I'm returning it, but I still need to make this async, otherwise I'll still get an error. So Visual Studio is pretty smart. It tells me something is wrong. I didn't have async here. But that's pretty much it. Now, this code technically needs to be part of a try-catch. Again, I'm not doing that because you know that that's just redundant here. But otherwise, in real life, in production, that better be part of a try-catch. I'm just going to do a try-catch in this case, just in case when we try this, I have an exception, at least it throws the exception. And then say throw X. Now, when we are trying to do a get async, we want to make sure there is URI. I have the URI factory, and then say create document. I'm trying to get async on a document. So if it's a product, I want the product back. Well, in this case, I'm going to have collection ID, and then also the ID that I'm passing in. So now I have the URI for that particular document, and then I want to get the actual document. So now where's the document? It's also part of your NuGet package. So in this case, I'm going to do a wait, but then make sure that this is changed to async. I'm just going to do this for every single method here, so we don't have to do it again and again. At this point of time, I can say read document async for that particular URI, and then return that particular document. Very simple. And keep in mind that this document is coming back as a JSON object. I'm going to create it, convert it over to dynamic. The next thing I'm going to do is convert it over to T, and now I should have everything. Now, this is not create database URI. This is create document URI, just to be clear. So we have a database, then we have a collection, and then we have an actual document, which is more like your record when it comes to SQL Server. Next thing should be update async. So when we're doing update async, we're going to say var URI equals to URI factory. Again, I need the document URI. I'm going to get it from here. Now that I have the document URI, I could pretty much use the same exact code base here. But in this case, the difference would be I'm trying to replace the document. So I'm going to say replace document async, and this is my URI, but replace it with the new value, which is this value. So now that I have the document, just return the document. And again, the only reason you see that error is because we don't have async. That's it. Again, this should technically be part of another try-catch. But again, we're going to just omit that for now. And then the simplest one out there is going to be delete. So we got await client.delete document async, and then we have URI factory. I'll just do it in the next line. .create document URI. I could possibly take it from here. That should do it for us. Now that we have our CRUD, which is really our CRUD that's actually working in case of our repository, we're going to go and create a controller. So I could do add new item, and then say web, and then go web API controller. I could say products controller. With web API, ASP.NET Core, you can get MVC and web API as part of the same controller, so it's pretty cool now. Now, once we are here, the first thing I want to do is use dependency injection, and I'll show you how easy it is. Just come in here and say, I've got this particular type. of product, of course, that's my class. And I'm just going to call it repository. To be generic, I could have called it product repository. And then I'm going to go and say private repository, and I'm going to call this underscore repository. And then I'll initialize this here, equals repository. That's pretty much it. And then say repository.initialize. Now, wait a minute. I haven't actually wired my IOC container. So what I'm going to do is copy this. And it's very simple. Go to startup.cs, go to services, and say services.addSingleton. And then use the generic one and say comma this, and that should work. So what it's saying is, anytime I ask for an iDocumentDB, you know, give me DocumentDB of product. And that's it. That's all I have to do to wire dependency injection. Super cool, huh? So what's the next thing? I've got my initialization happening for this particular repository, so what's next? First, I want to post something. Now, this is not a web API talk, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to hack this. I'm going to remove this. So I could just go and create a product, hard code it. Hard coding is awesome. In demos, of course, don't do it at work. At this point of time, I'm going to give it an ID. I'm going to make it simple. I'm going to say ID is 1, and then say model is, let's say, surface, and then description is going to be Surface Design Studio. Is awesome. If you haven't checked it out, you might want to. Now, at this point of time, I've got my document that I will return from my repo. So it's going to be a repository.create async. But what does it return back? It returns a document. And that's exactly my return type here. So that'll be my document. Now, this won't actually work because we're saying void post. So I'm going to change this to say async task of document, which is going to be my generic type here. So that's it. So here's a typo. So that post should work. Now, assuming that this works, we're going to test this in a second. Let's just go and make sure that get is working. So over here, let's just convert this string to int to a string ID because of DocumentDB requirement. So at this point of time, I'm going to say await repository. And again, you might not get IntelliSense until you fix this part. So let's go ahead and fix this first. And say task of product, and you have repository.getAsync. And then pass in the ID. So now we have the product, and we're going to return that particular product. Pretty cool. So we've got create, and we've got read working. So the next thing is put. And then it's not understanding what document is, so you're just going to use Azure Documents, and that's it. Part of the same NuGet package. So at this point of time, we can either pass this value from the body, or in the interest of time, we're going to remove this and still hard code the same value. I'm going to come in here and say I've got a product equals new product. And in this case, my ID is definitely the same ID. But my description is actually now going to change to iPhone. And then I'm going to say model as something that doesn't actually exist. I'm going to say 9. That's it. So now I can go and replace my current document with something else. And again, I'm going to use the same exact signature. And I could come in and say repository.updateAsync. And again, ID and product. That's all we need. We're really making a facade call to our API. That's it. So we can say return document. So we've got a void. So this is a little bit of a typo here. Once I remove this, everything should hopefully work. So we've got task ID, we've got put V. Everything works. At least it looks like it works. We've got everything compiling. That's a good step. And then next thing is delete. So if you remember, we were really not returning anything when it came to delete. So just keep it simple. So repository.deleteAsync. And I've got my ID here. So there's a lot of stuff here, but it's giving an error because it's not a string. Now let's see if it actually runs. So let's just do Control F5, fingers crossed. So Control F5, we got API slash values, which really doesn't do anything. Let's see, it did get value 1 and value 2, which is cool. It does the same for products, but Chrome is not going to be able to post, so what we're going to use is Postman. So we're going to go to Postman and then put this particular URL here and say post. And when we post, we were able to actually post something. That's cool. We got an ID1, we got Surface, we got Surface Design Studio is awesome. So let's just go to get and then change this to 1. And when we say send, we can see that we got the same exact data, which is really cool. Now when we do put, it should automatically change this to iPhone. And it does that. So we got model 9, we got iPhone. And then the fourth one is delete. So we hit delete, we should be able to see that that particular record is gone. Now delete doesn't give us anything back. So we're going to have to check this by going to get. So once I do get, I can see that I got a 500 internal error because I was throwing an exception when this was working. Let's go back to post and then send it. So once we do that, actually go back to products. Now it should work. And now we should have one record. So go back to our Chrome. And when we go to Chrome, we can go to our browse section or even the Document Explorer session and see I've got a products here. And if I click on it, I can see my document that just got created. So this is pretty cool. Everything is happening live. It's coming from Azure and everything is working. So we got a lot going here, which is pretty, pretty awesome. But again, in about 20 minutes, we got CRUD operations done on .NET using DocumentDB. So moving on to the next slide. Next, we're going to try to do the same exact thing, but this time on Node.js, again using Visual Studio 2017. So we go to Visual Studio and then close solution, and we're going to go and open some kind of folder. So in this case, we got Visual Studio launch, and we're going to just say select folder, because that's all we need. We're going to start everything from scratch. Right click and open developer command prompt. Once we do that, we will be able to see that we're in Visual Studio launch folder. So the first thing I'm going to do is say npm init. So once I do npm init, it will ask me for the name of the website. I'm going to say Kasten. And then I could add a lot of these versions and things like that and descriptions and every single thing that npm wants, but I'm just going to go and hit enter. And now it's going to put whatever is default because this really doesn't matter. I'm going to say yes. And now we've got something created over there. The next thing I'm going to do is say npm install DocumentDB because that's the package we need, and then hit enter. So once we do that, we can see that we have a lot of things that have come in. So we got a node module package, and this is really our node module, right? So we got different modules that came in. With DocumentDB, it also got some other modules, which is all what you get with the DocumentDB package, and that's all we need to make our code run. The next thing I want to do is add a file called server.js for my node.js code to actually run on the server. And then I need some kind of configuration. So what I'm going to do is grab the configuration file from here. I've got config.js and then copy it as it is and go back here and then paste it here. This configuration file is very simple. Just to save some time, I'll just walk you through this file. So I've got var config. This is really that one object that I have. It has a URI, which is the same URI we used in our .NET project. Again, in this case, it's a URI to your DocumentDB instance that's running in Azure. This is my primary key from Azure. My name of my database in this case is Kasten. And then I'm going to add another collection this time. Last time we used products, but this time we're going to use users as a collection. And then I've got some test data from DocumentDB website. So there's a lot of test data there. I just went there, grabbed some of it. All the way down, you can see only this one line is there, which is module.exports equals to config. Now what I'm doing is exporting this config object so I can use it somewhere else. So let's start coding our server. So as you can see, the first thing we would need is going to be the config object. So we're going to say var config equals to require, and then say dot config. And there's some cool IntelliSense that actually shows up because it was able to find out that there was a config object. And then we need document db client and then say require document db. And it's very simple, and then say dot, and you can see there's really some cool IntelliSense there suggesting that there's something called document client. Now we haven't created an instance of it, so what we're going to do is var client equals to docdb client, and then say config.uri. Now you can see that particular option coming up too, and then you have master key, which could be your primary key, which we already have in our config. So the config makes our life so much simpler here. I want to add another value here. Usually you'll have a lot more than this, but we'll just keep it simple and say HTTP status codes equals not found and say 404. And the next thing I'm going to need is the database URL. Now, if you use the REST API, you should read it on the website, documentdb.com. You will see that it's very, very predictable. So if you have config.database.id, this will actually give you DBs slash the name of the database will actually give you the exact database in Azure. And it's very similar for collection URL too. In this case, by the way, I'm using backticks. These are not single quotes. These are backticks, ECMAScript's, I think, 2015 syntax. So I've got the database URL. Once I have the database URL, all I need is slash cols. So you can see first it was DBs, and now it's slash cols. So we got $config.collection.id, and then once I end this, I should be able to get this. So you can see it's very predictable. I've got DB slash, let's say, ID slash cols, let's say slash another ID, and then if I had docs, I would have had another ID, right? This is a very predictable syntax right there. And we're going to do the same thing which we did earlier, which was create database if not exists, except this time we're going to do this with Node.js. So we're going to use our client object and say read database. Once I read the database, I'm going to say database URL. And then say, here's my callback. Let's say it's error, and then it's result. And then start my callback and close it right here. In case of a callback, if there's an error, well, then I want to make sure that I handle that error. Anytime there is an error, that means that database actually doesn't exist. So I'm going to say config.database. So create client.readdatabase. And then if that doesn't exist, you're going to have to go create it. So I've got created here. Again, another callback, same exact logic. And again, I'm going to check for an error here. So once I check for this error, I'm just going to go ahead and print that error or log that error. For now, I'm going to use json.stringify so I can see the exact error in JSON format. That's it. But if that error didn't occur, well, then show me the same exact value that was actually created. So now it's going to show us the entire database. So what's happening? So I've got client.readdatabase. If there is an error in reading it, well, then client.createDatabase. I'm glad I checked that. And if there is an error in creating the database, I want to know the error. But if there is no error in creating the database, then show me which database was actually created. So now that I have that, I still have to take care of this else situation here, where I've got else, and then I have console.log. And in this case, really what I'm looking for is the result. Copy this again, paste it here. That's it. So now I'm going to run this function. I could have done this using an iffy or an immediately invoked function expression, but the only reason I'm not doing that is because I would need to comment these functions in a second. So if I go to my admin command prompt and go back to the same window we were at, we are VS launch, we could say node server.js. You can see I got ID as Kasten, and then I've got RID, and then you can see that link, which I was talking about, db slash actual ID of that particular database, and that's what we need. That's really your URL to get to your database. So this worked, which is pretty awesome. Now we have this. The next thing we're going to do is create a function which is very similar like this, except this time it's going to create our collection. So I'm going to say create collection if not exists. And then I'm going to say client.read collection in this case. So I'm going to say client.read collection. And what does it really need? Now this time it doesn't need the database URL. It needs the collection URL. So we're going to get the collection URL, and then it's going to have the same exact callback with error and result. Now if this is a problem, that means it doesn't exist. So we're going to say create collection. And when we create the collection, you can see that it needs a database link, which is a string, and then it needs the body, which is the collection. Now do you see something here? It's very similar to what we did in .NET. The APIs are very similar. That's what it makes it so much easier to work with this thing. So now I can say database URL, which is right here, and then I have config.collection, and then I've got another option. So in this case, it's request options, and you saw what we did in case of .NET, but in this case, I'm just going to say null. And then I'm going to say error created. So once you have this callback, which is error, we're going to check for that error, and if there's an error, then JSON.stringify and log that error. If there is no error, then show me what you created. That's pretty much it. So we're going to copy this method and run this. Keep in mind, we've already commented this particular method, so all we're running is this. Go back here and say node-server.js. That's it. So I've got ID, users, indexing policy. You can see a lot of stuff here, but the ID of the collection that we created is users. That's pretty amazing. We were able to create, in just two methods, our database and our collection. So what's next? The first thing I'm going to do is add a lot of these documents that are actually part of my config file. What I want to do is add these documents and push them over to my actual Azure instance. So in order to do that, what I'll do is I'll say function and say get user documents. Or I could have said create, it doesn't really matter. And then pass in the documents. And it's going to be, I kind of know there are 10, but it doesn't matter. I'm just going to go with the actual logic, which is going to be documents.length. So once I check for, it's a for loop that goes from 0 all the way to the length of the documents. And then the first thing I need is the document URL. So keep in mind, we already have the collection URL. So what do we need now is really the document URL. So we can actually steal it, because it's a very similar pattern. Let's just take this, paste it here. We're going to use collection URL. And then the next thing, as you could see, we did it a few minutes ago, is going to be /docs, and then the ID. But in order to get the ID of the documents, I would need to pass in I, because that's really a for loop, and that's all it is. So here's I equals 0. There's a bit of an error. Visual Studio told me that I missed the 0 there. We're good to go. And now we're going to do read document. I'm doing one by one. You could also do bulk, but just for now, let's just do one by one. Read the document. It needs the document URL, and then I'm passing in null. We don't need the options for now. And then we have error and result. It's again a very similar callback as what we've been working with. So if there is an error, then there are two possibilities. Maybe I actually have the error code, and if the error code is very similar to what I was working with, which is not found, well, in that case, let's just go ahead and create that particular document. And this is a good practice, because if you already have a document, you know, you don't want to overwrite that document, because that's also doable. But again, right, it totally depends on your business logic. This is just one way of doing things. And then I've got the actual document, which is going to be documents I, and then I also have my callback, which in this case, if there is no error, means this actually got created. So I've got if error, then log that error, which is very similar to this particular logic. So I'm just going to copy this. So if error, well, then log that particular error. If there is no error, then tell me what actually got created, because I don't really want to see the list of documents that got created in the Azure instance. So I've got this if here. Next thing I'm going to do is handle this else. And again, in this case, it's also another error, so it should be very simple. Just copy this. And then we got one more thing left, because we've got this error, but what if there is no error? Well, in that case, we have the result. So if the document actually existed, then we have the result. So you can see this. I can copy this, but I'll have to change this to result. So very simple logic. I've got about 10 documents, and then I'm trying to read one by one. I get one document URL, which changes automatically every time the loop changes. And then if I can't find it, then I just go create it. And if there's an error creating it, well, then we log that error. If not, then we just show what just got created. So we've got a lot of these documents. So where are the documents? It's in config. So I'm going to use config.documents. That's it. And I've already commented every other method. So we're going to go here, node server.js. And you can see it did all of them. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, there's a lot of these. So it's all 10 of those. They're not necessarily in the same order, but we got everything going. Pretty cool. So what's next? Well, next is, how do I query these documents? I've got a lot of these documents, so let's just go and query. So this time what I'm going to do is I'm going to create an IFE or an immediately invoked function expression. This will take care of running the function on its own. And I've got my query, so I'm going to say, here's my promise. And again, it's a good approach to use a promise in this case. That's just simple JavaScript and Node.js. Of course, observables and a lot of other good things are coming. And totally depends on what you want to use at what point of time. But for now, we're going to use a very simple query, which is saying, select star from root, which is, give me pretty much everything you have. And then I could take that query and say it to array. And when I'm converting it to array, there are two possibilities. Either I got nothing and, you know, I had an error, or I didn't have an error. So if there's an error, then do something with the error. I could say console.log and say json.stringify error. Very similar to what we've been doing. Otherwise, I'm assuming that I have the data. Now, if I do have the data, what do we do? So we're going to do a for loop, let result of results, ECMAScript syntax, and then loop through it, and then just log it. So we'll just do a very simple log of all of this. And then, of course, if we got here, that means we resolved it. So we resolved the results. And that should work. So let's just try to do our query. Again, I'm going to do node server.js and run this. So I've got an error, line number 95. Let's see what happened here. So got a function here, got a query, and this started here. This did end over here. Run this again, and that works. So we got everything. Now this is a really big query, so why don't we just make it a little simplistic? So I could do where r.id equals, let's say, 1. And that way I'll only get one record. So that's it. So I got the record number 1, which is my name in this case, and that's it. That's all I needed. Perfect. So the next thing we could do is replace. Again, we got a document, and then what I want to do is replace it with another document that I have. So the first thing I would need is the document URL, which we could get from here. So in this case, we don't really need documents I, because it's not a for loop. So we got the collection URL /doc/document.id. And let's go and look for a record. So let's just say user ID number 3. So we got the name was Clementine. So for ID number 3, what I want to do is change the name to something else. So in this case, I could just put my name in here. And that's the only update we want to do. So the next thing we do is really use a promise again, like we've been doing. So we have a resolve, and then we have reject. And then the callback starts, and we close the callback right here. Very simple, very similar to the .NET API. We got client.replace, document, and we got document URL, and then we have the new document, and then we have another situation here where we may have a callback, so let's just add that callback. Very simply, we're going to take the same exact code and alter it to satisfy our needs. In this case, in the else case, all I want to do is resolve the result. So now I've replaced it. It might make sense to run this after this particular function. And this time, I just want to change this to ID 3. And in order to call this function, all we need is replace and then send in the document. So in this case, we're going to send in the document, which is going to be documents. Actually, ID 3 would be 2. So we'll see that that particular value will actually change. So we got the query first, then we replace it, then we got another query. So let's try this. Clear screen, and then we're going to do node server.js. So looks like we got another error there. So the error was simply a small typo. This was actually supposed to be result and not results. That's it. So run this again. So you can see that the first time it looked for ID 1, and actually we should have done ID 3 because that was the value that has actually changed because ID 1 already had my name. So why don't we just go change this to something else? We're going to just change my name to Dahl and then run this again. Make sure that this actually works. So for now, we can comment this particular one, and then for value 2, we're going to go and change this to Dahl and then look for the new value. So you can see that the name is Dahl and also has a space that we gave. So this actually works. Perfect. So replace is done, and the only thing we're left with is going to be delete, and it's going to be very, very simple. So what we could do is copy this as it is and actually create delete. So in case of delete, all we need to do is pass in the document. We already have that particular document. We don't really need to change or alter anything, any property whatsoever when it comes to deleting the document. And then the API is fairly simple. We say delete document, and then we have document URL, document error, and then we have the result. So we got console.log, json.stringify.error, and that's simply because if you had an error. If you didn't have an error, then you want to resolve this. You could say to delete document, take this particular function, push it here, and say config.documents. So we want to delete the document. We want to make sure that that document actually exists in Azure. So why don't we do this? You go back to Chrome, go to Azure, and check for Document Explorer. In Document Explorer, I've got two different collections. Now this time we have products, and we also have users. Click users, and I've got ID all the way from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And even if they're in different numbers, we have all of them. So we can see number 1, ID is 1, and name is Chandra Dahl. So what we're going to do is we're going to remove this particular record. So we go back to Visual Studio and say document 0, and then come back here and run node server.js, and this should technically remove that particular document. So once we do that, we're going to go back to Chrome and then refresh this data. And now you can see that I can't actually see ID number 1. ID number 1 doesn't exist, so we were able to delete it. That was it. We were able to do CRUD operations in Node.js, and the API was very similar to .NET. So prior to using DocumentDB, I was doing a lot of MongoDB development, and my biggest concern was taking that data and pushing it over to Azure, because a lot of times it's not that easy. But for our benefit, Microsoft's actually created a really awesome tool, which is DocumentDB Data Migration Tool. Let's look into that tool. In order to make that work, first thing I'm going to do is make sure the MongoDB instance is running. So as you can see, we have products and we have users and we have Kasten. Now, if I were to take my data, which is part of MongoDB, it will be a completely different collection. It could be part of the same database, but it will be a completely different collection. So going back to Visual Studio, now you can run data transfer or data migration tool as a simple install, but since it's on GitHub, so what I like to do is run the latest bits. So I got the source code here, and I'm just running it from the source code. I'm gonna do Control F5. Feel free to use the tool that's part of the install, and it's gonna work. So once I run this, I can see that this tool can do a lot of migration of data. So in this case, you can see that I can import from either a JSON file, MongoDB. I can also do a SQL database. I could also do CSV files. And if you ever used Azure Table Storage, you could do that too. Even RavenDB is supported, and DynamoDB is supported. And then you can also transfer data from an existing DocumentDB and also HBase. So that's a lot of options. Now, a few different ways we can make this work. One of the easy ways is to really export the data out of your MongoDB instance into a JSON file, because I would like to see what data is being exported. So in order to do that, I need to go back to command prompt and then grab this particular location, run MongoDB again, go to a different window, and while I'm here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do Mongo export, which is a command that comes with MongoDB. Now, you need to make sure that MongoDB is running while you run this command. And I know that there's a database called test, and then it has a collection with a collection with ID restaurants. And I'm going to take this data out and push it to a local JSON file. And I can call this file anything. I'm just going to call it restaurants.json and hit enter. So you can see that it was connected to localhost. It was actually connected to my local database instance, which is my MongoDB instance. And once I have that, it says 25,359 records were actually imported. So let's go and check if that really worked. So we can see here we got restaurants.json. We got open. I'm just going to open it with Visual Studio Code. And you can see there's a lot of data here. We've got an address. We've got coordinates. We've got street. And then we have a zip code here. And knowing this data is important because you need to understand how you would actually replicate this data. So what's going to be your partition key? What's going to be your ID? And things like that. So I've got cuisine, I've got grades, and then also have a date, and then I have a lot more data, including it's very similar to the same data because it's part of an array. And then I have name, and then I've got a restaurant ID. So two things from here I could gather was I could actually partition my data according to the zip code. And then that's something I'm choosing to do. You don't have to. It totally depends on your business logic. And the second thing I want to do is take the ID, which is not this particular ID, because this is a little different kind of an ID. Maybe I want to use the restaurant ID. I could take those two data points and then use it as part of my data migration tool. So going back to the data migration tool, I'm making sure that I'm importing from JSON files. I'm going to add the files, and we're going to take the same exact file that we just created, restaurants.json. Double click it, and you can see that that file is over there. You can also decompress the data if you want to. Hit next, and now we have a few different options. We could either convert it to a JSON file, which is very simple. It's going to create another JSON file locally. In this case, I don't think that has any value. We can sequentially import every single record, or we can also do a bulk import. Bulk import makes the most sense, so I'm going to pick bulk import. The next thing is connection string. So as you can see, the connection string is account endpoint, and then it needs the account key, and then it needs the database. So we're going to go and look for all these values. So the first thing would be account endpoint. And then go to Chrome and then get these values. So we're going to go to the key and get the endpoint, which is the URI. Same exact thing which we did in case of .NET, and the same exact thing we did in case of Node.js. And the next thing is an account key. So I'm going to type in account key and then grab my key right here and paste it as it is. And then the next thing is the database. So we've already created a database, which is Kasten. So I'm going to say database is Kasten, just making sure that that's exactly what it's looking for. It is. And then we can hit verify, and very quickly it's going to tell you that it was successfully able to connect or not connect to the DocumentDB account that you have running in Azure. And then we can add collections. Now in this case, what are really those collections? Well, restaurants is the collections that I'm interested in, so I'm going to add that collection. And then my partition key, as we discussed, is going to be zip code. And then my ID field is going to be restaurant ID. Now, you have to be very careful that if you get these names wrong, this actually might not work. So going back to Visual Studio Code, I'm just going to do a quick search and look for zip code to make sure it was zip code, not zip codes. And then the second one was restaurant ID and not restaurant's ID. And then I think we were right. That's it. So we're going to need to hit next. You can also add an error file, and you can manually go and do it. So let's say I created error.csv. Now you can get all your errors in that particular file and then say next. So that's it. Now you're ready to import all your data. It's about 25,000 records. Now you hit import, and within a couple of minutes, you probably have all of your data over there. So you can see you've transferred about 400 records already, about 500 records. That's pretty cool. So it's very fast, very efficient, gets the job done. Trust me, this is going to work. We don't have any errors. We don't have anything failed. This is amazing. In the meanwhile, there's a lot of things you could do with your Microsoft Azure portal. So for example, you can actually go and browse all your data here. So you see, I've got my restaurants, and if I want to go through every single restaurant, I can go to Document Explorer, and I can say restaurants, and it's pulling up the data I have. So I can see that I've got my ID here, I've got address, I've got street, zip code, and you can see there's probably going to be another ID here. And that's all the data I was looking for. So you see that restaurant ID actually got changed to ID in this case, which is happening with every single result because that's what we did. And we can play with all the data here. And then we have a query explorer. So we could also go and say, you know, run the query here. So in this case, my only option really in that case is going to be a cast and only has one product. But if I had something more than that, let's say users, and if I run the query, I could play with it right here. So I could do things like, so select star from C, or we could even say select star from root and hope that this works. And that did work. And I can say root R, where R.id equals, let's say, 6. And you can run the query here. Wow, so that was a syntax error. We've got select star from root R, where ID is 6, and we get the ID 6 back. So that's the query explorer that you have. Then you can also have your script explorers. That's where your UDFs, your, where you can actually use JavaScript in UDFs, your stored procs, and actually functions. You can actually use JavaScript functions. So you got triggers that would also use simple JavaScript, and you can do all of that here. I hope you liked it. Here's some of my information, and you can also revisit my course on LinkedIn Learning, and thank you for being here.